twisted here, and then he leaned back and thumb punched him there, and then he did this, and left hand to this, and right foot to this, and whatever. That completely ruins it. This is Taylor Stevens, the New York Times bestselling and award-winning author of the kick-ass Vanessa Michael Monroe thrillers, and this is the Taylor Stevens Show with my good friend Steve Campbell, where we are kicking writing in the butt one word at a time.
This show is all about kicking, and we're kicking writing in the butt. You write kick-ass thrillers, and today we're talking about fight scenes. But before we get to that, when we did the show right after you got back from Thriller Fest, and this was literally like right after you got back from Thriller Fest, I asked you what your favorite meal was in New York, and you shocked the heck out of me by telling me it was some food truck gyro, I think yes. It was. But it got me thinking when I was trying to come up with what could we talk about at the beginning of today's show, and I had last night, my wife fixed me my favorite meal to have someone fix me at home.
Okay.
And so I'm curious, what's your favorite meal to have someone fix you at home?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't actually have an answer for that because the way my life is right now, it's so scattered. I don't cook as much as I used to. My kids actually do a lot of the cooking, and they tend to cook stuff that they want to eat. I don't get cooked for that often anymore, but the one meal of the day that I really treasure is on weekends, and someone will cook me breakfast, and I really enjoy eggs. I eat a lot of eggs, and to have that just like a real hearty breakfast be prepared is amazing.
And how do you like the eggs to be prepared?
It's changed over the years. Growing up, we ate eggs for breakfast a lot in the cult, and they were always scrambled because it's almost impossible to make fried eggs mm-hmm. for 150 people and have the first one still be warm. So scrambled eggs were a thing. So I'll still eat them, but I'm not like, oh, scrambled eggs, I love them, unless they're made with, you know, lots of added yummy things added into them. I really like fried eggs, and I like them. It depends on what I'm eating them with, but
This is your dream meal. What is it? Eating them with?
Oh, well, I love hash browns. Not that I get those very often. Love them. Love potatoes. And so I don't really like really gooey things at all. So although I like it when the yolks are somewhat runny, I don't like it when they're really, really runny. So just sort of soft.
Okay.
I love bacon. I could sit and eat a pound or two of bacon, which is why we almost never have it at home. But I have a really good friend, an author, and whenever we get together, it doesn't matter which one of us is buying, we'll go to IHOP because I can get bacon. And so, you know, she doesn't even say, hey, do you want to go get lunch? She goes, hey, you want to go get bacon? And she's like, do you eat this at home? And I'm like, no, never, because look at me, I'm being a little picky. That hash browns and bacon and eggs and, you know,
toast.
Yes, toast. But I think I actually prefer like English muffins to toast. So I have a real sweet tooth. So, of course, I like jams and jellies and stuff. You know, in the perfect world where there are no calories, I would put as much. They would be like, oh, are you having a little bread with your jelly? Yes. Yes, I am. Just a little. I love cheese. Real big, I guess. Dairy and dairy and eggs and, you know, all that. I love it. So yeah, breakfasts are really my favorite meals of the day.
Okay. So we could title this segment of the show Saturday Breakfast with Taylor.
Yeah. Or Sunday or whatever. Every day of the week.
You wish.
Yes, I do. You said in my perfect world, right?
It's time to get to today's topic, and, you know, sometimes I try and be really, really clever with how we introduce the topic. So I'm picturing you and your author friend at breakfast, and I'm picturing you ordering your bacon, and I know what it's like to order bacon at IHOP. You don't get a lot. If your friend orders bacon, does a fight scene break out?
No, she just gives it to me.
Oh, nice. That is a friend. All right. Well, that's a really lousy intro to our fight scene.
I should have totally worked with you, but I'm just so literal. I had to tell the truth.
I could imagine like a brawl starting up and somebody tumbling out of a booth and some chairs being knocked over and some elderly women moving out of the way and screaming and people calling 911 and you just going back to the table and finishing the bacon.
You just wrote an amazing scene there.
Thank you.
Steve, I mean, all you got to do now is transcribe it, and you've got the workings for a really kick-ass scene.
All right, let's talk about kick-ass scenes, because that's sort of one of the things that you do. And I've heard you say before in past interviews that your readers have a certain amount of bloodlust when it comes to Monroe and like to see Monroe get into these situations. So let's talk about writing fight scenes.
Okay. So, you know, my long-term listeners know I am a self-taught author. Like, I have not had somebody sit down and teach me how to do this. So this is how I have learned to write fight scenes, which is really slowly. And that sounds like I'm being facetious or like there's a punchline there, but it's not. I'm being completely serious. The faster the scene moves, the slower you slow it down. That is how you write a good fight scene. I've been asked many, many times in author events and such of how do I make these fight sequences so real that you can picture yourself in there and you can feel the swings and stuff. And I say I do it by removing all the details. And a lot of authors will go, you know, his right fist connected here with his that left shin bone and twisted here, and then he leaned back and thumb punched him there, and then he did this, and left hand to this, and right foot to this, and whatever. That completely ruins it, because people spend so much time trying to envision that right foot going to the left knee or whatever that they get pulled out of the moment. And I do exactly the opposite, where I slow everything down to the heartbeat, boom, boom. And it allows you to put a lot of action in a very tightly scripted scene without having to cram it all together really fast. And the longer you drag it out, the more real and intense it becomes. And what we're experiencing in these fight scenes is Monroe's inner thoughts, her rage, her bloodlust, her reasons for doing what she does, heartbeat to heartbeat to heartbeat. And with every heartbeat, the tension rises. Another thing that a lot of authors will make the mistake of doing, and this is a huge pet peeve of mine, is they use the word as he swung his fist, she spun around. When you use the word as a way to show multiple things happening at the same time, you completely pull the reader out of that heartbeat experience. As should never be used in a fight sequence, ever. You simply replace it with, he swung his foot, she spun around. The reader will put, as long as you're writing those sentences in the specific order you want the reader to see them, they will see it as a seamless transaction of movement. But when you put that as in there as a joiner, they're sitting there trying to figure out which one actually came first. And that ruins the pacing. It ruins the moment. Another thing that should never show up in any form of suspense or fight sequence is the word suddenly. If that word shows up in your writing, suddenly he heard a noise, you've just freaking ruined the entire scene. There is no suddenly in suspense. The suddenly is he heard a noise. That's all. So when you take those elements and you combine them by spelling things out in very short. I tend to write very long sentences because I hate words that are passive. I mean, I write a lot of passive words in my first drafts, but I'd pull them all out. And one of the most passive words in existence is the word was. We use it for more than just passive writing, but I try to eliminate as many was's, were's, et cetera, as possible, because they're filler words. And if you can find a way to eliminate them, you can put more powerful words, more emotionally impactful words into a story. Sometimes there's just no way to get around it. But as a way to eliminate a lot of the was's, the were's, and all of those, I tend to write really long sentences. But in action, that all changes. Action is short, 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 heartbeat to heartbeat to heartbeat.
Now, when I read your fight scenes, what I envision in my mind is this thing that we all feel when we're under, like, immediate stress, something that's come at us from nowhere, and we hear the term or the saying, and time stood still. Where, yeah, like, you're in a car accident or something, and all of a sudden time stands still, and the last 3 feet seems to take, if you were writing it, 5 pages. And that's what I see in when I read your fight scenes, that time stands still, and we're getting the heartbeat by heartbeat thoughts of Monroe, and then occasional action.
Yeah, and it'll just whip into place. And that's exactly what I'm going for. And what my intent is to get the writing out of the way so that the reader can make their own mental movies. No one is ever going to see the same fight sequence as somebody else, because it's all inside their head. Their own mind is filling in that blanks. And that's what makes it so intense, is that they're not distracted by me.
That's interesting that you say that, because one of the questions that I had written down here was the importance of accuracy. And when I think about fight scenes, I'm thinking about, well, if you did this, and then what would happen with this? But what you're describing is something that's completely different, because no two readers see it the same way. So how important is accuracy?
Accuracy is, I think, and this is just the way that I write, and if somebody who is maybe a martial arts expert is writing a story, this advice is not going to apply to them, because that martial arts authenticity is why people are reading that person's book. So disregard everything that I say. If you are a martial arts expert, write it point by point by point by point and script those scenes out, because that's why people are reading it. But that's not why they're reading my work. And so in my case, there is no accuracy, because I'm not writing. First of all, I have a character who's not fighting in any particular style. And, you know, people say, well, what does she fight? I guess the closest you could get to it is Krav Maga, but she wasn't trained. You know, she's fighting for her life. So there's no style. She just fights dirty. She fights prison fighting. She fights to win. She fights to kill. No form, no nothing matters besides stay alive. So the accuracy is stay alive. But if you're going to fight a scene in which somebody's, you know, fighting in a particular style form, then accuracy becomes important, because those who fight in that particular style form are going to be going, hey, no. So it really depends on what exactly you're writing in that sequence. If you're writing a barroom brawl, then you get to have fun with it. There is no accuracy.
All right. I guess this is related to accuracy, detail. And you mentioned if you're a martial artist, you know, it's one thing. And let's just assume that we're not martial artists. How much detail? Because you said what you do is you slow it way down so that it doesn't need the detail.
I remove a lot of the detail. And by detail, I mean fist goes here, leg goes there, and all that type of stuff. But certain details do matter. If you're going to cut somebody and make them bleed out, make sure you actually know where the arteries are. I had a fun one in one copy editing experience where I talked about, oh, I can't even remember, but it's the artery that runs underneath your arm. And it got cut, and the copy editor didn't know that that was an artery, and they tried to change the wording to make what they thought was going on. So those types of details are really important. You know, another one is like kind of know what's feasible and what's not. Like, you know, growing up, watching the few movies that I moved would watch, you know, the little things, it kind of got in my head that, you know, you could kill somebody by slamming the cartilage of their nose up into their brain. But realistically, that doesn't really happen, medically speaking, which I learned, I don't know, through reading some blog or forum of people talking about stupid stuff that shows up in novels. So those types of things are really important. You aren't going to want to kill somebody in a way that they actually can't be killed, you know? That type of accuracy, though, is more of a look it all up before you put it down type thing, which I didn't used to do when I was writing The Informationist because I didn't know any better. But all it takes is being torn apart in a few reviews that you start to get real careful about what kind of facts you put down in your book. So when I'm writing fight scenes, I do try and be real careful not to have it where somebody dies from something that is hardly likely to happen. You know, just like, you know, someone can get shot 25 times and still live as long as they're not shot in a critical part of their, no, not shot in the brain. Well, people do live for that too, but not as often. You know, not shot dead center in the heart. You know, you're not really going to have a good chance of living through that. But, you know, these scenes where you just shoot once randomly and then the person dies, and you see in the movie all the time, and you're just like, oh my God, rolling eyes. And you try and avoid that type of stuff too, because anything you can get away with in a movie with the music and the drama and the cut scenes and all of that, you can't get away with it in a book. You just can't. So that type of accuracy is really important too.
How much time do you spend, and I'm having a hard time with the phrasing of this, and what I want to say is, how much time do you spend setting up the fight? I guess it's how much time do you spend setting up the need for the fight or the desire for the fight? And how important is that? So it's not just, you know, you walk around the corner and there's somebody and you start fighting.
Well, that's an element of foreshadowing. And it's going to depend a lot on the character. If you have a character who's constantly itching for a fight, like Monroe is, you know it's inevitable. And that foreshadowing starts as soon as the pacing, the plot starts to kick into gear.
It seems to start the minute she decides to get dressed at 2 a.m. and leave the hotel.
That does happen. It could be the moment she decides that she doesn't have anything to lose. It could be the moment she decides, I hate this person, and when this is over, it's not over. It could be any one of a dozen things, but sometimes there's fights that she didn't expect. But if there's going to be someone that sort of like that big explosive scene towards the end where she's fighting a bad guy or whatever, then the reader's going to see that coming a half a book away. Because you're foreshadowing it. It's what you're building up to. It's what they're expecting. But then you'll have scenes where, you know, someone is in the room and with a couple of other people and someone makes a joke. And then out of the blue, the person turns around and slugs someone. You know, you may or may not have seen that coming. Or someone out of the blue turns around and shoots someone. You may or may not have seen that coming. So it really depends on who the characters are involved in that scene and how weighty it is towards the character's emotional life of how much foreshadowing is building up to that fight.
Well, let's use as an example, and this is not a specific example, but you tossed this out, the idea of foreshadowing on the big culmination fight. You know, the foreshadowing might start halfway through the book. When you get to that, the big crescendo ending, if it's a fight, how important is the fight scene itself? And I'm asking this question. It's sort of a trick question, and I have something from another book that I had read a long time ago that really stuck with me that I want to mention after I get the answer.
I think that the fight scene itself might be slightly less important than the resolution that we feel from the fight scene. So I think that, again, it's going to be situational based on the characters, based on the genre, based on what exactly. But if you can drag it out too long, too. because what readers are actually looking for is a sense of satisfaction. And if it just goes on and on and on and on and on, they're going to start skipping pages to get to the sense of satisfaction.
And that's something that I was thinking about earlier as you were talking about this. I find myself more and more when I read fight scenes that aren't particularly well written, I just want to get to the end. So I'm just reading the first sentence of each paragraph, and I just want to know how badly hurt our hero is at the end and move on. Because I know the hero's not dying. Let's just get on with the story.
Yes, I'm the same way, and which is why it's critical that there's an emotional component to the fight. And you know, we've talked about that third draft with the very fine brush strokes. In order to make that fight scene have that emotional impact, you've got to have more than just the kicks and the punches. There has to be fear or lust or hope or something emotional, some emotional connection. Otherwise, there's no reason for the reader to, unless they just want to see a description of a fight, there's no reason for that. There's got to be something more to it than just kicks and punches.
Okay, now I want to give my example, because when I was thinking about the show today and what we might talk about, I was reflecting back on fight scenes that I've read that stayed with me, and there's one that probably stayed with me more than any other fight scene, and it was a book, it was written by Harlan Coben. I don't remember the title. It's part of the Myron Bolitar series, so if anyone out there listening knows the title, please leave a comment or shoot me an email or a Twitter message and let me know.
Comment.
Sorry, yes, definitely a comment. But in the book, Myron's friend Wynn, who is just this sociopathic, tough guy, can't be beaten, you know, just unbeatable, sort of a Monroe-type character, a superhero-type character. And the setup beginning very early on in the book is that there's someone that's better than Wynn. He's bigger, he's stronger, he's faster, he's trained with different people, and he's going to destroy Wynn. And this tension builds through the book until it's not the culminating scene, but it's very, very close to it, where Myron and Wynn are at this house, and that guy's inside the house. He's waiting for Wynn. Wynn has to go in and save somebody, and he goes in. And Myron just sits outside and just bemoaning his fate because he knows Wynn's going to be killed. 3 minutes later, Wynn walks out without a scratch on him, and everything's fine. And there was no fight scene. It was just the three quarters of the book setting it up that made it so memorable.
So as a reader, did you feel that sense of satisfaction?
I did. And it's because of the resolution. Myron Bolitar, these books, it's like...
They're a lot of fun, I've heard.
They are a lot of fun. And there's a lot of martial arts in them. But, the fight scenes are always very quick. And I just wondered how they were going to pull this off, but it was so satisfying to have Wynn just walk out of here like he's just dusting that guy off, like the lint on his jacket kind of thing. He wasn't scratched up. He's just like, okay, now where's the girl? How do we save her?
Right.
And it was over. But it was that sense of the emotional payoff without the fight scene that I found so odd. But when you gave your answer to the question, I thought you were going to give a different answer, but you were talking about how important the emotional reaction was at the end, and that's exactly what I got.
That's fascinating. I think one of the most disappointing scenes I've ever read was one in which the story revolved around some detectives who had to call in an expert in this. I don't want to give away any spoilers because I don't want to make it sound like I'm disparaging any author. It was a young girl who was very good at this particular thing. By young, I mean like maybe early 20s. And they needed her expertise in order to really understand what the bad guy was doing and the tricks that he was up to, because she sort of understood the psychology from having lived in that particular world. And this girl was integral to the story, just integral. And at the end, when the big, big crescendo came down, she was completely missing from it. So here was someone that could have actually beat this guy at his own game. But instead, it just fell back on the old trope of, oh, let's go shoot him. And it was highly disappointing. I felt like it was a huge missed opportunity. But the book was written before female characters were star players in stories. They were always just sidekicks. So it probably never even crossed the author's mind that it could take that turn, especially since she was not the main character in the book. So it stuck with me that if you're going to build up a tension between two experts, the bad guy and whoever else, that they're equals in something, let that person have a hand in the resolution, you know?
All right, let's wrap this up with one last piece of advice. If you're advising us, and we're writing a fight scene, and we're not martial artists, we're not boxers, we're not fighters in general, how much detail should we put into a fight scene?
Just enough for the reader to make their own story. It's the same advice I give with description, in that beginning authors just over-describe everything because when they read, they see movies in their head, and they feel like that's what they need to do in order to get other people to see movies in their head. And a fight scene is the movie of the movie in your head. But the way to have it be impactful is to just give the reader enough to make their own movies. Don't over-describe. That is my advice.
Okay, and I lied when I said this was the last question. I have one more. Do you have a favorite fight scene that you've written?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. But I have a favorite book that I've written because it is almost pure rage, and that's The Vessel.
That was a satisfying ending.
I liked it. But I'm not saying I like the writing, but I just like that, you know, it was Monroe at her best and her worst. It was like all those parts of her that are so kept under constraint in the other stories just let loose. The demons were let loose, and it made for some really fun writing.
All right. We will be back again next week with what I can promise will be a more lighthearted episode.
Hey, this was fun.
It's been fun, but not lighthearted.
Okay.
So that's it. What is our call to action?
Oh, you're not allowed to spring that on me like that. I did it last week.
You did?
I think so. Or I'm just going to go with yes.
All right. That is our call to action. This week is to say yes when you scroll down the page.
How do you do that? You're so good at that.
When you scroll down the page, you get to the bottom of the show notes. In your own mind, think, yes, I am going to share this show on Facebook to my social media platform or on Twitter or on Google+. And I'm going to click that button and I'm going to share it because I want Taylor to be happy.
Well, that would be nice. And also tell them why you're sharing it. I'm sharing this because I want Taylor to be happy. That would be hilarious, wouldn't it?
That would be. But you could also say that it's a great show about writing fight scenes.
Yeah, that would probably be better, if not as hilarious.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will be back again next week.
See you guys next week.